You are listening to Screenfish Radio. I'm your host, Steve Norton. The past and future collide once more in the latest and potentially final entry of James Cameron's famed sci-fi series, In Terminator, Dark Fate. Nearly 30 years after the events of T2, Sarah Connor returns to battle to protect Dani Ramos, a mysterious young woman who may be the key to saving the future of the human race. This week on the show, author Troy Kinney and Screenfish film analyst Chris Utley return to talk about the film's portrayal of fate versus free will and its questions into the nature of technology. Welcome back to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Welcome to Screenfish Radio. We are glad that you could join us this week as we talk about Terminator Dark Fate, the next and potentially last entry into the Terminator franchise.
I'd say last.
That's what I'm hearing. this week I am so glad to have two of our regular returnees back, Troy Kinney and Chris Utley. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you so much.
Greetings and salutations.
Starring Linda Hamilton and Arnold Schwarzenegger, Terminator Dark Fate takes us to Mexico City, where a newly modified liquid Terminator, the Rev-9 model, arrives from the future to kill a young factory worker named Dani Ramos. Also sent back in time is Grace, a hybrid cyborg human who must protect Ramos from the seemingly indestructible robotic assassin. But the two women soon find some much-needed help from a pair of unexpected allies, seasoned warrior Sarah Connor and the T-800 Terminator. As always, this podcast is rated S for spoilers, but guys, what did you think of Terminator Dark Fate?
How many times are they going to make us go back to the well?
You mean in general or for the Terminator franchise?
I think I'm OD'd on reboots. Revivals, whatever you want to call it. I just sat there, big little cushy leather Dolby Cinema seat, bass going all over the place, and it's like, is there nothing original left under the sun? I just sat there like, just, okay, I know I'm supposed to care, I know I'm supposed to give credit, because Jim Cameron comes back to produce, and that's supposed to give it legitimacy and clarity, but I don't care. I walked out of theater like, I literally do not care.
Well, this this is going to be a short episode.
No. It's not that. It's just, who is Dani? I don't care. Who is Grace? I don't care. They went out of pocket in the first 5 minutes of the movie by killing off John Connor. I know that's a discussion point we'll hit later, but in the rest of it, why am I supposed to care? It's they're constantly, as filmmakers, are putting the cart before the horse, thinking that if we can just pencil in Arnold and pencil in Linda Hamilton's return, that's going to be enough for you to shell out enough box office for us to make you wait till movie number 3 when you find out who this AI Legion is. I don't care. You got 2 hours to bring all of that stuff into me or else I'm tapping out. And I tapped out.
That's interesting. I didn't think about the empathy aspect. I think I just went into it thinking that this is an action-adventure movie. And I didn't really concern myself, I guess, with empathy for Dani. But I think you make a good point that we're just assumed that we care for these characters. And, yeah, they didn't develop them very much, right? And so
Exactly.
I agree with you. I mean, on the other aspect, I would say the movie's a lot of fun, but if you're a thinking person, there's problems with the movie, and you brought up a point that I hadn't considered. I had these other problems with the movie, but you make a good point.
I think this is a great example of, you know, everybody talks about superhero franchise fatigue and all this stuff. Mm. This is a franchise that has been poisoned over the last 20 years. Like, they have not been able to make a movie that's watchable. And I actually liked T3. This, you know, this to me is T3 part 2.
Me too. Yeah, T3 was good. They actually did some screenwriting at the end of that with plot twists where Kate Brewster's dad ended up having to lead them into the underground military base because the Skynet thing was actually going to happen. So, it would have been neat to see where that was going to go, but instead you got grungy Christian Bale cursing out people on set and all that jazz. So, oh well.
Oh, and you had Arnold's return.
Genesis, please don't. Yeah, Genesis. Oh, God. Oh.
See, those movies just fog for me. For me, T1 and T2 stand out. T3 was okay, and then it's just a fog. I don't even really remember much. I was trying to put them together in my head, and then this movie happened. I think this movie has the potential of being memorable, but you have the two characters in there that you like, Linda Hamilton's character and Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, but I don't know if that's going to be enough. I guess it's not doing very well in the box office.
Well, they're saying it's going to lose 120 mil, and honestly, when I saw it, I came out of it. I actually liked it, but I felt like it was so hard to get up for it because of how many bad entries they've had. Like, imagine the Marvel Cinematic Universe if by the time you got to the first Avengers, the only good one was Iron Man.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and it's sort of like, oh, finally we can.
The last five were Fantastic Four.
Yeah. I mean,
those were rough for me. Those Fantastic Four movies.
So, I mean, to me, I think that like this one, I thought had a lot going for it, and I like that you said, Troy, that it could be memorable. But the problem is, to me, is that we've seen them mess with this so much that the problems with this film are not with the film. I mean, sure, there's issues, sure, and it's the same story. But that's sort of you can't improve on Terminator 2. Like, in this franchise, you can't improve on that. So you have to figure out new ways to sort of do the same thing.
Yeah, and I think if this movie, like you're kind of getting at, if this movie appeared in the past, closer to Terminator 2 or even 3, I think you would have had a huge blockbuster. Because then you wouldn't have had all those other films detracting from its potential. So, I think that's what they tried to do. It feels like they're trying to make it Terminator 3 Part 2, but I think people are so far removed from it. And I don't think the youth, who I think they're trying to attract to a movie like this, I don't think they care as much. You know, they look and they see, oh, Linda Hamilton looks old, and Arnold is old. They're not the blockbuster draw that they used to be back when you and I were watching these movies when they came out fresh.
Well, I've heard this compared to The Force Awakens, and I think that's fair, because that's kind of the same idea. Okay, we've got some fresh new characters that are going to bring some new life to it, but we've also got the old people in there for a part or a whole or most of the movie, so the returnees will be back, but then they can pass the torch to the next generation, you know, and that's kind of what I felt like they were trying to go for.
Pass the torch to the next generation when you killed off one of the next generation knees.
Yeah, that's true. That caught me by surprise.
I thought it was
a kill anybody surprise. Off. Kill off Sarah Connor and then let Danny and Grace get in the Jeep and go hunting and we will go.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because in The Terminator, in the first film, of course, they kill off Arnold Schwarzenegger because he's the villain, but they do kill him off. And they bring him back in the next one.
And they killed off Kyle Reese, who was the hero.
That's right.
And a.k.a. John Connor's dad. So,
But they could bring
Sarah Connor standing alone, pregnant, going off into the vast wilderness to protect her son, the chosen one. But who the heck is Danny? Who are they protecting? Like, what's the goal? It's like cute. They get into the Wrangler with no doors in it, but hey, where are they going? And do we care? Again, do we care? $29 million weekend? No, we don't. Next.
But they're repeating what they did with Sarah Connor in the first one, because we didn't know her very well either, and I think that they were hoping that that would be our draw. You know, she's got a dad and a brother, and they both get killed, and we're supposed to feel for her, but they do never really develop who she is or what her background is or anything. It's just they just did the Sarah Connor thing like they did before, and that wasn't enough.
But you know what is interesting to me about this, and this is one of the things I did feel about the film and felt about Danny specifically, was the fact that the whole thing about Sarah Connor was that she was going to give birth to John Connor, who was the leader of the resistance, right? As near as I can tell, this girl is just, you know, this sort of plucky, who, which I'm fine with and I think is good, but it's, they sort of set it up that to me that, well, if she died, wouldn't somebody else just stand up? Because John Connor was the chosen one and he's dead. So if she died, wouldn't just somebody else stand up and lead the resistance? Like, it seemed sort of inevitable to do that to me. So that was the thing that lost it for me, because there wasn't that immediacy for her to be the one.
Yeah, and it was interesting, that conversation they have on the train, or right before the train, where Sarah Connor was talking about, because I've heard it said the Terminator 1 and 2 are great anti-abortion movies. That they're trying to protect the womb of Sarah Connor so that she can have the son that brings humanity back. And even Sarah Connor said...
That's a little stretch, but all right.
Sarah Connor says it about her womb. She says, they're after your womb. I thought that was an interesting statement that she made. But then we find out later it's not about that. It's about her actually becoming like a John Connor type person.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I thought was really interesting about this one is she actually says at one point that now she's nobody. She was the mother of the chosen one, and now she's nobody.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I actually kind of liked about the film. I love what they did with Linda Hamilton's character, especially if you kill off John, what do you do with her? Because of the way that they built her up in the first one. But in this film, they sort of set her up independently as mattering without just being the mother of the chosen one. You know what I mean? Like, she matters outside of that role.
It would have been interesting if they would have started with her character, like, getting a text that something was going to happen in Mexico. That would have been an interesting take. And her showing up and meeting those people there, like, instead of the way we started with Danny and her family.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I'm always into rewriting, so... Because I have other plot points and problems in the movie, but...
What you described is armchair screenwriting. That's my...
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought this was really strange marketing, but I don't know if you guys saw James Cameron was interviewed last week, and as the movie's coming out, and he described sitting in the editing room as a bloodbath. And what he said was he sat down with Tim Miller, worked out the story treatment, and that he and him were like yelling at each other in the editing room. Because he said, I know this franchise, so I think I should have some input into, you know, where it goes, which is fair. But if you're marketing a film where you're trying to bring it back to life after, you know, ultimately almost 30 years, finding out that your iconic director and the new guy that he's supposed to be taking the reins from him got into a screaming match over what the story should be and how the editing thing. To me, that's not good marketing. Like, I don't want to know that. Like, I don't know anybody that would say, oh, good, James Cameron tore a strip off the new guy. Like, this. But...
I'm trying to imagine J.J. Abrams and George Lucas having the same tete-a-tete during Force Awakens.
Yeah, that's true. But George Lucas didn't come out the week before it came out and said, I hate this movie. He waited at least 3 weeks.
he also sold his rights. So,
yeah.
He didn't have a say.
That is true.
But the whole thing about the Cameron thing is, like, they brought him back for a producer cred, you know, but he's the king of the world. So are you going to argue with him?
But he also owns the rights, doesn't he? They've gone. I think that they've actually reverted back to him now.
So maybe he can do that between Avatar 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
There was a lot that I did like about the film. I liked what they did with Arnold. I liked what they did with Linda. And I liked the new turn. The hybrid, what was her name? Grace. I liked Grace. I thought she was interesting.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
you know I was a hater when we came on the podcast. It's not the fact that anybody's performances were bad or any of that nature. Like, nobody was horrible, you know, in terms of acting-wise. It's like, again, it all just goes back to screenwriting. It's like, you have to give me a reason to care.
Yeah.
Why am I going to spend my time to reinvest for the next 6 to 9 years in this franchise? You got to give me something.
See, that's why I think they started with Linda Hamilton. We already do care about her, and we would have had a buy-in there, and then Danny could have come in, and it wouldn't have been, because it hinges on Danny and our care for her and her relationship with Grace and how they each protected each other, but they didn't develop that too much.
Yeah, but you see, the new kids coming into it, they don't care about Linda Hamilton in the same way.
Right.
So, exactly. Yeah, us old heads who were around for T1, T2, you know, Sarah Connor, Linda Hamilton is iconic. Your average 18, 19-year-old kid, they had to go back and they would have to go back and watch Terminator and T2. To get the whole story and the gist of it, you know. It's almost as if they made the sequel maybe 10, 20 years too late.
Yeah. And that's what I mean about it, about the water being poisoned before it got a chance, because I think this was a good sequel. If this was made in 1999 or even 2001, like, you've got a much more powerful story that's happening here, because they're still relevant to them. But, I mean, at this point, there's just been so much damage done to the franchise. Even if the script is really good, it's hard to bring life back into it, I think, at this point. Like, especially since there's only a limited number of things you can really do with this franchise in terms of stories. You have to now have a good Terminator, and you have to have a bad Terminator face off. But it like, this one actually works. I like what they did with Arnold's character.
You can't necessarily have an old one. It's like, I was not moved during that fight. I mean, let's get to the Rev 9. It's like, as crazy as indestructible as that thing was, its whole scope, its whole movement, and all of that. You can't help but just go back to think of Patrick as a T-1000.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's just a sleeker, hipper version that does all the exact same stuff. There was nothing like groundbreaking with that. It's like he turned his arms into swords. Now, if he turned his arm into an automatic weapon and could nuke half the city, then I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But it's the whole trick of it now can split in two, and half of it can go in one place, and the other half will be in another. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to need something more. And they can't just be Grace with her hybridness, just, you know, having a metal plate underneath her skin. I mean, give her a real legitimate skill set, too.
Okay, so something about the film that Cameron liked and was excited to go back to was the film's sort of relationship with technology. So since we're talking about the T9 or whatever he is, I forget.
Rev 9,
sorry. Do you think the film's views on technology have changed since T2? Or does it seem outdated at this point? Because it has been almost 30 years.
I don't know. now you got me thinking about this movie that I went and saw.
Well, good. I'm trying to. So that's
yeah, because I guess what I expect when I see a movie like this is talking about technology. Maybe this is what you're getting at. A lot of times we know when we go see a science fiction movie or a movie like this, it's action adventure, yet it has science fiction added onto it. We kind of expect to see things that we would see in the next 10, 20, 40 years from us, because we've seen that. We've seen that in previous movies that had certain technology that we have today. And so now I'm trying to think, did this movie offer anything that the earlier Terminator movies did not offer as far as insight into technology and ideas of humanity farther down the road? And I don't know if it added anything new now that I'm thinking about it.
Well, you go back to the first one, it's the fact that it's this indestructible killer. We find out in the climactic scene after we blow him up that he's just this robot underneath. And then you find out eventually there's a whole slew of them pretty much at war and this, that, and the other. And then there's a super... The whole thing that made T2 such a classic is the fact that the T-1000 was just such a major quantum leap enhancement over Arnold's T-800.
Right.
And that was just fascinating. You're absolutely glued to the whole... entire screen. It's like you shoot him and da 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 da, and all of a sudden the bullets dissipate and he's back to normal. You're sitting in the theater like, whoa. What it's going to take to stop him. And then finally Arnold gets him in a frozen ball, but then some lava unfreezes him up or whatever. And it's like, man, this thing's indestructible, you know. But like you're saying, you have to take it to another level. You got to kick it up another notch if you're trying to get 21st century buy-in to your franchise. And I'm sorry, that Revenant skill set just, you know, wasn't enough. You know, they had to bring a little bit more heat.
Yeah, and I mean, they had the chance to do that. I mean, obviously Skynet doesn't exist anymore. We have Legion, which is an interesting name, but...
Who the heck is Legion? They want us to invest and to stick around. We'll tell you who Legion is in movie number 3. Sure. This is not Star Wars. This is not a situation in which we are glued to for 3 movies to find out who Rey's identity is, you know. It's Terminator. We love it, but it doesn't have that kind of investment and buy-in from, built-in buy-in from audiences to where we would need to wait that long to find out who Legion is by the 3rd movie. Give it to me now.
But because they have a new thing, they had a chance to really explore alternate ideas, alternate ways of transporting themselves through time. And alternate, I mean, you know, this is me now again going over my head. Like, wow, they could have really exploded this thing into something completely different. They almost held on to too many of their old tropes to push this movie forward when they could have said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to have them come in this way, or we're going to have the bad guy this thing or something else. You know, now my mind's going crazy about all the things they could have done instead of holding on to some of their old little pieces that worked before, but they don't work now.
But you know, even more than that, one of the things, you know, going off that, one of the things that I was thinking about was the fact that there was no new arguments about technology. Like, you know, in the 80s, there was this threat of, you know, this idea of a threat of where is technology going to take us, right? And by 92, there was sort of this redemptive part of technology. Don't worry, we can fix things, you know, sort of stuff like that. But I mean, here we are nearly 30 years later, and you know, like, there were a couple of vague references to modern technology, but, like, you could have easily made use of things like the controversy about things like social networking, or even, you know, Alexa and Google Home. Like, there could have been some reference of that. The best thing they give you is a line that says, nobody walks through this world without leaving a digital trail a mile wide.
Yeah.
You know, so, but near as I can tell, I don't think correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think Danny Ramos uses the internet once. I don't think any of them does, because they're off the grid.
Yeah, the Rev 9.
Hiding their cell phones in Ruffles potato chip bags. Really?
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, does that really work?
Well, now I know that fixes all our problems. It's all, you know, it's just like wearing a, you know, tinfoil hat. Very similar. But see, this is what I'm saying. Like, I remember when, now, again, different franchise, but when Minority Report came out.
Mm-hmm.
And when Spielberg made Minority Report and created the future, he created a reasonable future based on where we were going. And ironically, there's a lot of things on there that you could say, well, that's actually not that far off even now.
Right.
And I know, I understand that in the Terminator franchise, it's always leading to the end of the world, so it's always apocalyptic and whatnot. But you've killed Skynet. You've blown up Skynet. You've got this advanced technology, and in a film that's trying to show you about the threats of technology, all you've got is people living off the grid. I think the only other reference that I can think of at this point is, like, in The Factory, and she makes a reference to the fact that, you know, we're just keeping our spot warm for some machine, you know? Like, I thought, okay, we're going to get into something about, you know, our jobs being replaced by machines. Sure. Or something. And then it was left on the table.
Yep.
Because I think the way we've interacted with technology is entirely different. Like, Terminator 2 was made before the internet.
That thing right there, the first thing I thought of, okay, so maybe she's some sort of hacker.
Yeah.
Maybe she finds a way to, like, because they established that in that factory, it was her work on those machines that was keeping her brother's job alive. And
yeah.
In that whole plant going, like, so maybe she finds a way to hack all of this to do whatever. Maybe that's why they want to kill her. But nope.
I love this because whenever you talk about the movie, it ends with "but nope." It has happened like six times.
Yeah, you know, and I was having problems with, like, where's the plane going? And we haven't even gotten there yet. We're still on the intro.
That's a very, very good point. Where the heck were they flying to? And don't get me started with the only Humvee who can withstand being plunged, submerged in about 10,000 feet of water.
But, I mean, the plane scene was fun and it was exciting. It was cool, but it just seemed like, if the plane were going somewhere, like, hey, we know where it all started. We know where Legion started. We know where it was made.
Right.
And we're heading there in the plane. That would have made sense to me. But meanwhile, the corporal or lieutenant or whoever that guy is that brings the electronic impulse things, he disappears.
I don't know where he disappears. They were going to write it in to him being the grown-up version of the kid in Terminator 2. That's who I thought that was at first.
Okay. Yeah, because there's no explanation to the connection between him and Sarah Connor.
Like, he just shows up on the scene, and him and Sarah Connor had this relationship established already.
Right.
We're just supposed to assume we know what that relationship is. And he can get multiple gunfire attack and not die. So he's impervious to something. But,
well, he just disappears. I thought they pulled him on the plane with them, but apparently not. I don't know. Maybe I missed that.
I thought so too. No. Nobody knows.
Yeah, no. Well, maybe this goes back again to the editing issues, because that was one thing I did feel as the film was unraveling in parts, is that there seemed to be two different visions fighting for the story. Or at least maybe that's just how it felt. Like, there were so many good elements that just didn't come together. But again, it's not a bad one, but it's not good enough to bring new life to the franchise. And they did right by Linda Hamilton. They did right by Arnold Schwarzenegger. They did right by the, even the tone of the film, but it was frustrating in that regard.
So it becomes episodic.
Okay, the tone, you say. What was dark about the fate? And then her just grabbing, just popping out there. There is no fate but what we make. Well, that is not your line. If you heard that, Sarah Connor would have stabbed her in the throat. You don't say that! The love of my life said that!
You're killing me, man. Oh, my goodness. What's dark about the fate? I love it.
Well, okay, okay.
Hey, they chose the title. What? You have an answer.
That's fair. So, okay, here... With that in mind, let's segue to this here, because at one point they say, do you believe in fate, or do you believe that we can change the future with every decision?
Yeah.
So it's interesting with this film. I mean, in the first 10 minutes, they kill off John Connor, and yet we're still on this similar adventure to what we've seen before. So my question to you is, what do you think the relationship is, even in this film, between fate and our ability to change the future?
Think about, you know, in the past Terminator movies, we went through and we destroyed all the remnants to try to get rid of Skynet, which apparently happened and it worked, but Legion took its place. And so in that sense, at least in the movie's view, AI is still going to come take us, and still, for whatever reason, we don't exactly know, kill all of humanity. But at least in the Matrix movies, they used us for batteries. So there was a reason in the future of a Matrix film to say, okay, yeah, we're AI and we rule over everything, but let's use humanity for batteries. That's one of the things I've always had a hard time reconciling with the Terminator movies. Like, okay, so you kill all human beings. What's the point?
Exactly. It's like you're walking around with your super high-tech weaponry, and every place you roam, you have turned into a desolate wasteland. For what?
Right.
To have a robotic pissing contest. We're number one.
Well, you know, that was one of the things I liked about the old movies. And actually, this is like you were saying before, Chris, that's what I really liked about T3 Rise of the Machines. I actually like the idea that he says at one point that, well, we stopped Judgment Day. No, you only postponed it. You know, there's some sort of inevitability in it. But Skynet jumps on the internet train and everything just sort of malfunctions, and that's what it does. With this one, it's, again, like so many of the other things we've talked about, it's unclear, even more unclear. You know, they just sort of say, oh, Judgment Day is coming. Well, that's all well and good. I do want to know why. Maybe we care more about why now than we did 29 years ago or however long it was. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting that it's sort of inevitable. But then they keep saying you can change the future with every decision. But they've defeated their own argument because all they're doing is changing it to that inevitability. Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So we killed John Connor, so now it's not going to happen that way. But it's going to happen some way. It's going to happen with someone else, which was my whole thing about Danny Ramos, is because if she dies, then wouldn't somebody else just jump up
at that point? Yeah, that's a good point. The Terminator kills John Connor, and then that's it.
Why is Danny Ramos the key? And the hubris of James Cameron said, if we throw it all up one screen and make it stick, we'll get him in hook, line, and sinker, and then we can answer those questions in our already pre-planned trilogy that we've mapped out. Problem. Carts before horse.
But, you know, to speak to that, though, I don't even think they hinted at a mystery about Danny. Like, you're asking why. I don't think the film leaves it open for that, because I think they explain it. All from anything I got there, it was that, oh, she's the one that leads the resistance again.
Yeah, right.
She's That's the plucky young woman who steps up, which, again, that shows progression. Because remember, like, James Cameron was really one of the first action heroes to to show a woman as strong lead character in an action franchise.
Yeah.
So, but even with Sarah Connor, she's still a mom. You know, in this case, they've made her an individual separated from having to give birth. It, like, her role is to lead out front. So, okay, so that's a change. But other than that, they don't give you any other reason that she's the one that has to lead. So this idea of changing the future in a film like this, I think you were right on, Troy, when you said the Matrix movies gives you a reason for sort of why it has to unfurl the way it does and why you can kick back against it. I absolutely believe that, you know, we are able to make decisions that affect our future for sure, obviously, that, you know, free will. But this movie sort of gives you that free will in such a limited view because it doesn't really matter who's doing it.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking in the first, I want to say in the first two films, they make it very obvious that we've put ourselves in this position.
Yeah.
That we have created a situation where we've ended up destroying ourselves. And so that did not come through in this movie either, where it's like, we have done this to ourselves. It's almost as if Legion just comes about all by its own without us creating. Because, I mean, that's why T2 exists, right? Because they had the technology. They made it happen faster because they were able to look at the technology, and we killed ourselves. I mean, Sarah Connor does make that one comment about militarizing something or other, and she makes a comment that they never get it. I can't remember exactly, but that didn't come through this time. It didn't come through like, we need to look at ourselves and reflect on what we're doing to ourselves, how we're treating ourselves, you know. And there was great opportunity to do that, and I think you were kind of hinting that earlier, like, all the time we spend on our screens, or all the time we spend on social media, or all the time that we do all these things, what are we doing to ourselves if we're going to end up in this place?
Well, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm thinking. Is there? We are living in a time where actually the Terminator franchise, in theory, should really have an interesting spin on it. And you can tie it to the old ones while still having that grounded current conversation, and it misses the mark. Like, and you know what? You talk about not really understanding why things are happening. Something I'm thinking about just now, Danny is not the first person that Sarah Connors has had to protect. So yet again, there are the Terminators are just sending people back at random now. Like, it's not like they've always been after Danny. There have been other people first that she had to stop.
Yeah, she does make mention.
This is not out of the blue. It just happens every couple of years, she says. They come back. So they're just sort of – I can't believe I'm using this word, but there's no logic anymore. anyway.
Yeah, it's a good choice of words. It's a very good choice of words. Again, because again, like I said – that's the whole problem with their arrogance in their filmmaking techniques. They thought they had a 3-card deck to reveal what was in their hand. And when they revealed the first card, their pride and arrogance thought that we, the audience, was going to take whatever they fed us for the first 2 hours and say, okay, I'm in on the next one. But nah. Sorry to do it again, but I'm saying, I mean, trust me, the box office, not just in America, but globally, has spoken. And Steve and I, we've talked about this all the time on our ongoing Screenfish staff chat, but the industry is changing, the world is changing. And this whole notion of them pre-building trilogies before you're starting to make the very first movie, that's over. because the screaming game is killing you. Because the screaming game understands you've got one shot. Netflix understands you've got one shot. Amazon understands we have one shot at this. So they're going to throw it all into that story, develop it well, shoot it well, drop it, boom, because you've got one shot. Studio filmmaking still is in this arrogant mindset where it's like, well, we don't have to tell our story in one story. We can tell our story in three stories. The audience will just follow just our name recognition. Not anymore.
Except, Chris, just to push back on that a little bit, we live in the world of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, I mean...
But with that, you don't get to 19 films over 12 years if Iron Man is a turd. It's the Force Awakens that came out and just face planted like Solo did. We wouldn't be sitting here talking about, okay, Rise of Skywalker and trying to play guess the plot, you know.
Yeah.
You can do that on that big level, big scale filmmaking because you already built enough cred with your audiences, multi-generations, to go ahead and make those plans. You can do that with the Star Wars. You can do that with a Marvel. Terminator's not on that level. Number one, it's an R-rated franchise. You know, you're not having 8-year-old kids saying, Mommy, I want to go see Schwarzenegger.
That's true.
And girl keeps saying, who is this old person?
Even my high school kids.
He was a man.
Yeah, so, I mean, I teach high schoolers, and I ask them, you know, what'd you guys see this weekend? Anybody go see anything this weekend? It is interesting, my responses. Nobody went to go see Terminator.
Yeah.
No teenager, and I have mostly seniors, so 17, 18-year-olds. None of them went to go see it on opening weekend. And the draw wasn't there. They just were not that interested. And so I didn't recognize the young people in the movie. I thought maybe they were young people that my students would recognize, but no one said anything about any of the people in the movie. They're like, oh, yeah, I think I want to go see that. But did they not do an audience test? I mean, those of us that are in our 30s and 40s or 50s, we know that franchise.
Hey, I'm knocking on that door.
Dude, hate. I'm knocking on the door in just a couple days. I turned 50. So.
All right. But, so you're the young dude, Steve.
But you're right. With the Marvel Universe, you get PG-13 movies. You radically expand your audience in such a big way.
But you still have to make them good. Like, keep in mind, the last three Terminator movies have been PG. And the only one of those three that's resonated was the first one that I'm referring to, which is T3. And they had a TV series. Pardon?
Terminator 3 was R, big old fat one.
It was?
All that shooting and her butt naked walking in the street at the beginning. That was R.
I don't remember. I can't tell you.
They've done their best to try to keep it fresh, but I think the audience has moved on. It's just us old heads who are still around from the 80s, you know.
But you see, this...
And how many of these 80s franchise reboots have we seen this happen on? It's like same thing happened with Ghostbusters. Like that's why I said at the beginning, it's like, how long are they going to keep going back into these wells trying to reboot
old
stuff? And it's cute to us because we're old, but you got to realize it's like it's a whole new generation who's been raised on stuff, and now they're coming up and they're having kids, and they don't have the same sense of nostalgia that we had.
I'm ready for new ideas out there. I agree. Them going back all the time, it kills me. Every time I see, it's a reboot, or it's part 3, part 4, part whatever. What is this?
This is part 7, part 8.
You know, and talking about the Marvel Universe, most of those movies can hold their own. You can go watch an Iron Man on its own. You can go watch a Captain America on its own, and it holds its own, and it works.
You can't watch Terminator or Dark Fate on its own. You have to have previous knowledge. You have to have the... if you go in dry on this one, I think you're going to be lost.
No, that's true. That's true. But you see, you know, I don't have as much of a problem with the reboots thing, although I get tired of them too. Like, it's like, okay, I have to care about this one now. But I will say this, that voice has to change. You know, that, you know, I keep going back to the editing room in this one, because here you have two very distinct voices. You've got James Cameron, who, again, I don't know these guys, but these are things I can imagine based on what I'm seeing in their filmmaking. You've got James Cameron, who says he knows what he's doing. Sure, he's king of the world. He's going to be known known for that forever. You know, this is how you make a film. We know from history the guy is, like, he's crazy in terms of, like, wanting control of every aspect. And then you've got a guy like Tim Miller, who is best known for writing Deadpool and has a very different and distinct voice.
Yeah.
And so, again, I don't think it's an age thing. Although I do think it's a voice thing, because I know older people that sound like they're young and younger people that sound like they're old. But you've got two very distinct voices, and Miller would have a voice that would connect more readily with a younger audience.
Yeah.
So, but you've got Cameron saying, you know, well, I'm fighting for the purity of the franchise. Well, that's all well and good. But at the same time, you are going to alienate some of your audience just because, like, they'll go to R-rated movies, for crying out loud. Like, we're seeing Joker is approaching $1 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me. But there's something about that film that speaks to the issues that they're seeing and dealing with in the world right now. And that was my issue with this one, is for a movie that has all the potential, just rife with potential, to explore technology in today's world and where it's going,
yeah,
and it leaves it on the shelf.
Yep. Well, it's still sitting in that factory.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, because the only thing that is a cell phone gets used to send a text message. So, you know, they're right in tune with what the way the world works today. And
well, that's it. See, in there, now I just thought of something else. I thought it was interesting when it's Faith that's talking about the past and when everything stopped. And we have the airliner crash, which is pretty shocking, I suppose. But that could have been a thing. Like, maybe Legion turned everything off. And then there's a plot into that. Like, what does that do to humanity if everything gets turned off?
Hmm.
That could have been the Dark Fate. Everything turned off. It's dark.
And they didn't explore it. Come in, bring the light. Perfect Christ allegory, y'all.
There you go.
They didn't explore the topic. They didn't go and explore what that really means, because all of a sudden robots show up and start killing everybody.
Well, guys, I could be wrong, but I think we're sort of going in circles here at this point, like the film. Maybe we should screen it or skip it. Terminator Dark Fate, screen it or skip it?
Oh, man.
Screen it at your house when it comes on Redbox. There's no need to go to the theater.
I'd say that. Screen it on your own. It's a fun movie, but it does have its issues and problems, and I wish it was developed more.
Yep. If you're late 40s like me, you've got a teenager in the house and it's on, and you'll get to pause and talk all the way through it. This is who the lady is. This is who the old guy robot is. And playing the whole, if nothing else, it's a reason for your kids to go back and see Terminator and Terminator 2 if they're old enough to watch them. But the rest of it, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, you guys, I honestly, I think I enjoyed the movie more before this conversation, because the more we talk about it, the more... Honestly, I
feel the same exact way.
I'm skip it. I was like, man, that was a fun ride. And the more we talk about it, I'm like, that movie sucked.
I know, I'm going to go home crying now.
the dark fate is that this movie exists. No, it's still not as bad as the other ones. And I think you're right. I think if you're going to watch it.
It ain't as bad as Genesis Debt. Oh. Lord have mercy.
That movie is actually unwatchable. It's I think in that one, doesn't John Connor become a Terminator at some point? Like, it's
That's the end of Genesis. It's like stupid.
I think I skipped that one.
Oh, you're blessed.
But, don't crap at the wall. See what sticks.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could watch this one at home, but the more we talk about it, the less impressed with it I am. It's so unnecessary. I like Linda Hamilton's work, and I do like what they did with Arnold, but it's just it's missed opportunity again.
Yeah, the nostalgic parts are fun for us oldies, but I don't think the young crowd's going to be that interested.
Yeah, I think you're right. Listen, guys, thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it. And for you at home, a reminder that you can find us wherever podcasts are available on SoundCloud, Podomatic, iTunes Podcast, Google, Spotify. You can find us on your Alexa device via Stitcher. And if you go to the podcast page, screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More. And if you go to the podcast page at screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, small group questions that can help you get the conversation started where you are. Next week, we will be back with another new episode on Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, the new semi-biopic on Fred Rogers, starring Tom Hanks. We're looking forward to that with Julie Levac and Jolie Featherstone returning. But guys, thank you so much for being on. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.